Western University and Amit Chakma are back in the news. Just when you thought the double pay story had faded fully into the background, you have the story today about just how much it cost Western to manage the situation. The Western Gazette first reported the story. MNA has now confirmed that Western spent just under $100,000 for PR and legal advice as the controversy started to snowball. The majority of the money went to Navigator. They're a PR firm based out of Toronto. They were paid $65,000. Western says they were contracted through a legal counsel. Hicks Morley, one of the two legal firms that the university hired for this, is a London legal firm that specializes in finance and accounting. They were paid $24,000, while a second London law firm, Fillion, Wakely, Thorpe, and Angeletti, was paid $6,500 for general legal counsel. So the final tally in total comes up to about just over $96,000. In an email to AM 980, Western said it relies on outside advice from time to time to provide independent and dispassionate counsel that ensures Western responds appropriately to their many stakeholders. The university said that hiring contractors is the most effective way to assess their services rather than have specialists of this nature on staff full time. I'd say it's an understatement to say that Amit Chakma and the controversy about the double pay upset a lot of people. It raised a lot of questions. It was widely believed at the time that Western did not respond well, did not handle it well. They were largely silent, very difficult to get a hold of, which is interesting considering they spent $65,000 in Navigator, the PR firm. Richard LeBlanc is a lawyer who advises boards. He's an expert in corporate governance, also teaches at Harvard and York University. He joins us now to discuss this further. Richard, appreciate the time today.
Oh, my pleasure, Devin.
Well, spending $96,000 is the final total for what Western spent. Isn't as bad, so to speak, as the double dip that really is what required Western to get this legal and PR advice. First off, before we kind of go into some, maybe the lessons learned from all of this, what was your reaction when you saw this story out today?
Well, my first reaction was almost $100,000 is an awful lot of money. There's a natural tendency when a board is in crisis to lawyer up and to get advice and to entrench and to be defensive. And I'm not saying all of that occurred here, but some of it did occur. So $100,000 by any stretch is a lot of money. It doesn't really address the double dip situation, but I think what would have been better here is whenever a CEO is in trouble, the CEO should not be speaking or fielding the primary calls from the media. It really should be the non-executive chair of the board. And more and more boards now are looking at that and looking at media training for their chair and for committee chairs. Once the crisis happens, it's too late and you're in play. And that was noticeably absent in this situation was the non-executive chair of the Western board in control, speaking to the media. That didn't occur. So you essentially had a conflicted CEO, a conflicted president. I mean, he was the issue. So you want someone a little more independent.
Otherwise, in a normal situation, if you had maybe a controversy for Western in general, you'd have maybe Amit Chakma speak in that case. But when he is the controversy, it's hard for him to be, I guess, doing both sides of it.
Yeah, and it diminishes the brand and the reputation of the university by not having that independent person camera ready. So for the most part, you know, almost all issues can be handled by, the communications department within the organization. But once it starts reaching senior levels, then the board is in play.
How many boards would you say are really media savvy at this point? I would imagine most join it not thinking that they're going to have to deal like something like Chirag Shah, the chair of the Western board here, ended up having to deal with in their own way.
You're right. The reality's changing. We're now in the age of social media. You might have hours. You don't have the luxury of days or weeks anymore. And a lot of my board clients I'm advising, particularly in sensitive industries, crown corporations, transportation, communication, to have advanced training. You know, a lot of this is really technique. It is, you know, putting a microphone in front of the person's face and even doing mock exercises. Good boards now are having social media exercises and fire drills, so that when a disaster does happen, an oil spill, we saw that with BP, we saw it with listeriosis at Maple Leaf Foods, we saw it with mad cow disease at XL Foods. You know, one of the lessons learned through all of this is that the worst thing you can do is go dark, go silent, entrench, lawyer up, be defensive. The classic case in crisis management by a well-handled board was listeriosis with Maple Leaf, where the chair came out, the founder of the company said, listen, we made a mistake, we're going to make it right. He was authentic, he was genuine, he was remorseful. So the answer is not always to hunker down, but that's a board's natural tendency, and that can often be as damaging, because you lose control of the ability to affect the message. And I think we saw a bit of that in the Western situation. We also saw it in Dalhousie as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you don't speak, you allow others to set their narrative, and when you're trying to deal with a controversy, that's not the way you get it to go away, really.
That's exactly right, and the public and stakeholders make inferences. You know, we suspect, and there is evidence, there's academic evidence, that, you know, stakeholders begin to distance themselves. You know, donations might go down, support might go down. So this crisis can really cause some damaging effects to the organization, and that's all the more reason to be in the age of social media to be camera ready. You don't lose very much by going through some various fire drills, and a lot of the tricks and techniques that that journalists use, and they get trained as well. So I think what was missing here, the lesson learned from this, is you can be in play at any time, and the answer is to really engage with the media. I recall there was one reporter in particular where the president, I'm told, would avoid this person and not answer questions. And you really want to be direct, authentic, and you want to have that independent board voice. And in this case, it should have been. The chair of the board.
It will be interesting to see if they have learned from maybe the earlier missteps, because there's the dealing with the media aspect, but there's also, seems like this has brought back some of the earlier issues. You referenced it earlier with maybe alumni donating money. That has come up again with today's story. So some of what existed before is still around today that still needs to be, I think, dealt with by the board and by the university here.
That's exactly right, and we saw this at Penn State, we saw it with Dalhousie, we saw it with Western Ontario, we see it with a number of universities, is that stakeholder support, which is just vital for a university, it affects admissions, it affects funding, that can quickly go south if the crisis isn't handled properly. The broader issue, too, is university boards. They're far too big, they're not competency-based, they're not independent. Oftentimes the executive has a hand in selecting the directors. The directors are selected, you know, on the basis of donations or relationships with the university. We really need smaller, tough-hitting boards. Education is changing dramatically right now, with online, with, you know, the student debt, the cost. So we really need scrutiny of executive compensation at the university level, similar to what we had in hospitals. So it's part of a bigger issue, which is the nature of university governance as well. So this is a teachable moment, not only for a crisis, but also for the way universities are governed in the province of Ontario.
Do you see that maybe starting to change in maybe some other parts of Canada with regards to universities?
No, it's the last bastion of ineffective governance. It really is. And I teach this, and I'm at a university myself. So, there's academic freedom arguments, there's professorial tenure. We really need legislation. And this is what McGuinty passed with the hospitals a number of years ago, which was pay for performance, complete transparency. Every board has to assess the CEO, disclosable metrics based on quality. And that really is what we need for universities, because, it's a huge amount of the Ontario budget. budget. Education, healthcare, and education are the two greatest expenditures. So we really need legislative action. I think universities are incapable of changing from within, and these crises that pop up really reveal the defective governance and also the climate and the culture. Witness the report by on Dalhousie, the culture of misogynist, sexism and bad culture. This in various ways is present at many universities. So the short answer, Devin, is that we need legislative change.
Even if you have a chair, a board, maybe a CEO that do have the proper media training, do you think it's still a good idea in some cases to bring in some of that expert advice from the outside for some cases like what happened here?
Yeah, it's always a good idea, but a good chair has a real sense of public policy, public pulse, and you don't let the tail wag the dog. So the lawyers are not in charge, the PR experts are not in charge, the board is in charge, and that's driving the message. And you really have to have a sense of confidence and a sense of doing the right thing. There's a natural tendency to be led along by advisors. Advisors don't have a fiduciary duty, so the tail doesn't wag the dog. You really need a grounded board that has a sense of self. And the more you can discuss that before a crisis happens, the greater the likelihood is that when something does happen, and it often does in today's age, you really know and you've done this before, and you're calm and you have a mature confidence, and that is a real Class A board. So advanced thought and preparation is wise.
Finally, it is interesting to compare the response to this story today to what happened before. Because they've been largely silent today, aside from speaking to the Western Gazette, because they still have this compensation review by the retired Justice Gouch that's underway. That bill has not been tallied. So this almost exact same story, I think, is going to come back whenever Justice Gouch has finished the review.
That's exactly right. And the scrutiny of this review, the independence, the recommendations, the cost, reviews like this probably don't come cheap. It could be as much as what the PR bill was. So this story is not going away, and the eyes are going to scrutinize and the media as well, quite correctly, on any recommendations by the judge. So yeah, you're right. There's more shoes to land on this story.
Richard, I certainly appreciate your time and your perspective today. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Devin. Take care.